You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is a Locked On NFL podcast. And as we do every Sunday night, we get together with some of the greatest minds and talent from the Locked On Network. Lined up for you today, we have the Texans, we have the Bills, and then we're bringing it on home with the Mike McCarthy news with the Packers. So that was very timely. I'm going to try to squeeze this in a tight little window because I got to get to my Steeler responsibilities, so I'm recording right before that game. But we're leading off with Robert Land from Locked On Texans. Robert, what's up, man?
Hey, we just got lucky again. The Texans just keep getting lucky week after week. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, it's starting to be a bit of a trend. I mean, I've said for a while, and I regret it a little, that, boy, this is the least exciting win streak I've ever seen. But win streaks are win streaks, and yeah, there's an art to learning how to win in this league.
Yeah, apparently Bill O'Brien, when he lost three in a row to start the season, was a terrible coach, and I guess since then, the team's been coaching themselves. I don't know.
obviously, you saw this in greater detail more than I did, but it seemed like a lot of turnovers, managing the game, getting to an early lead, settling for field goals, although that wasn't that big a deal considering the score at the time. A lot of Lamar Miller. Watson was, I don't want to say he was managed. He played well, but didn't hurt the team, and that's exactly what these guys needed on that side of the ball.
Well, Watson played really well in the first half. Yeah. I mean, barely had an incompletion in the first half. I'm trying to remember the first half stats, but
I think he was 11 for his first 11.
Yeah, no, he started off the game just on a big-time streak. But, I mean, they are doing what they have to do now, which is, you know, Deshaun Watson's become a game manager. And here's a crazy stat. I don't know if people nationally are paying much attention to this, but Watson was racking up big attempt yardage in the first couple of games of the season. Since I guess in his last seven wins, the six previous to this one, he hadn't thrown over 25 attempts. And this game was the first game since week five, I think it was, against Dallas, that he had more than 30 attempts. And so, you know, they're running the ball and they're having success with it. And their offensive line that I guess is still the worst in the NFL. And you can, you know, refer to Mike Renner on that. I'm sure all of our stats are terrible or whatever, but they open up holes. And last I knew, the running still counts for an offensive line. That still means something. And the other thing is, you know, this offensive line gets killed a lot of times because they want to look at sack numbers. And Deshaun Watson holds the ball a ton.
He's always going to be a high sack guy.
And because he's looking for the big play, and sometimes he just needs to throw the ball away. It would help him to just survive and advance to the next day. And there are times where he needs to do that. But we also respect it because, you know, us that watch this team and understand what Watson's trying to do, because he's trying to make a big play and he's trying to score touchdowns instead of field goals. And yeah, they did score field goals in this game, but it didn't seem like they were having the red zone issues. A lot of them were long field goals. I mean, that wasn't necessarily the case. I mean, Kyme Fairburn, 5 for 5. He had a 50 and a 53 yarder. One was over 40 yards. So, and one of them was at the end of the half, and that drive just stalled because time ran out on him. But, you know, when you look at what the Texans are doing right now, it's Deshaun Watson handing the ball off and just playing smart football. And, you know, you got to give Bill O'Brien some credit for that.
Yeah, it's funny because you said something along the lines of, I'm not sure if the national community realizes these stats. And you talked about his lack of attempts, his low number of attempts. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, the fantasy community sure has. You know, anyone that drafted Watson thinking he was going to score 4, 5, 6 touchdowns a game like he did last year realizes that, boy, they have reeled him in considerably. But we're not playing fantasy football here. And Bill O'Brien, to me, is a strong Coach of the Year candidate for understanding his team, finding out the best way to win, and while Watson has immense playmaking ability, like we're kind of seeing in Seattle right now with Wilson, reeling him in is the best thing for the team and still giving him opportunities to make plays. I think it's really impressive. And along the O'Brien lines, you kind of opened with that too. This guy hasn't had a quarterback before Watson his whole career in Houston. They always win 8-9 games. They get to the postseason. I think he's an underrated guy.
And he's got Romeo Crennel, and Crennel continues to destroy rookie quarterbacks. Yeah. Baker Mayfield, the latest, and this Texans defense, and he does this year in and year out. There was 1 year of the last 5 years, 1 year under Bill O'Brien, that Romeo was not the defensive coordinator and the defense stunk. It also coincided with the year that J.J. Watt was out most of the year, but he was out another majority of another year, and that didn't matter. This defense was in the top 10 with Romeo Crennel throughout the Texans and O'Brien tenures. So Crennel, again, his defenses get better as the year goes on. Historically, they just seem to gain momentum. This defense seems to be gaining momentum. They've never had safeties before. Justin Reed continues to be the steal of the draft. He comes up with a strip fumble on the 1 yard line after the Texans looked like they got burned for a 70 yard play. They also had interceptions by Zach Cunningham, an incredible one-handed interception. Don't be surprised if you see Zach Cunningham in a Pro Bowl one of these days. He's been injured some this year. He's also had a slow start like a lot of the Texans, but that guy is going to be a great middle linebacker one of these days, like great as in you will know him more on a national basis. And then throw in the fact that Jonathan Joseph had an interception. The old man just finds a way to keep doing it. He got hurt late in the game. Hopefully he'll be back next week, but you know, he's having quietly another solid season. And they got an interception from Andre Hall, who quietly has come back from cancer in an incredible story. That doesn't seem to be getting the play that some of the other cancer stories have gotten over the years. I hate to say it like that.
But you're right, yeah.
But, the defense, it wasn't good in the second half, but it's one of those where you jump out to a 23-0 lead or whatever it was, 20-0 or 23-0 lead at halftime, and that happens sometimes, and I think Romeo got a little bit – he got a little bit less aggressive. It's also a little bit of concern that J.J. Watt had – knee issues. He was questionable before the game. He didn't look like the J.J. Watt that we're used to seeing, and the pass rush just wasn't there. So Baker had a lot of time to throw most of this game.
Yeah, it's funny you beat me to it, because I have like three or four notes I just wanted to touch on with you. And you mentioned Romeo. He took over as head coach with the Browns when I was a scout for the Browns, so I was around him a fair amount. Extremely, extremely impressive, especially in person when you get to see him work his magic and analyze players and all those type of things. But my notes here were, everyone talks about J.J. and Clowney, and when you get further away from the line of scrimmage, the Honey Badger gets some pub too. But Reed and Cunningham are really impressive young up-and-comers.
Yeah, I don't know if you've looked at the defensive rookie of the year candidates, but I'm assuming he's in the top three.
There's some really good ones, though. Van Der Esch, Derwin James, Ward, Chubb's coming on strong. It's a good year. Leonard in Indianapolis, so I don't know that he's in that running, but that's a little unfair to him too.
Yeah, you mentioned Denzel Ward. He gets hurt in this one.
Yeah, hurt.
And
yeah.
And then after he leaves the game, his poor replacement got a whole heaping helping of DeAndre Hopkins, and there was about three plays in a row that he could have been called for pass interference. Two of them he did get called for it.
Ouch. Robert, this was a blast. We always do these, you know, 8-10 minutes each. Is there anything else you want to mention about the game? And where can they find your work other than Locked On Texans? Then I'm going to tell everyone about Action Heat. I told them about it last week. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing else I would say about the game is, you know, the Texans quietly, I think everybody was like, oh, this is the worst division leader in the AFC, and they're hanging in there with everybody else in the AFC except for the Chiefs that have a one game advantage, but they're right there with, you know, Steelers at this point and the Patriots as we're recording and all that. So they're right there, and they're still trying to get not just in the playoffs, but maybe even a bye. I mean, that's still in play. So, I mean, that's something that people, I think need to think about as well. It's just at Locked On Texans. Our website's lockedontexans.com. And also, you know, if you want to hit me up personally, it's at HST Podcast. That's my Houston Sports Talk podcast. But just excited down here. And I'm hoping Some of the rest of the nation takes this seriously. I know the fantasy owners pay attention to everything. I don't know about the national media if they're paying attention to the Texans as much.
They're going to have to soon. I mean, I think this was a really impressive game. Robert, this was great. I mentioned that I wanted to talk to people about Action Heat. Maybe you Houston folks out there listening don't have as big a need, but I know that the Locked On Bills folks and the Locked On Packers folks could certainly use some Action Heat gear. And if I was going to the Steeler game tonight, I absolutely would strap on some Action Heat goodies here. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. I mean, how great is that if you're outside making a snowman with your kids or anything, or skiing or whatever? I mean, or if you just don't like the cold, period. Action Heat clothing is engineered and safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. It's like wearing a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees. They're powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours. So if you're going to a game and you're tailgating the whole time, you'll be fine. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. That would be awesome for me. I have this old iPhone that dies all the time, and I always have to take things with me everywhere I go. So I'm going to have to take that up next time it's cold and I'm outside. It's perfect for any friend or family as your holiday gift. Great for anyone that works outdoors. I didn't even think of that. If you're outside, you know, doing construction this time of year, this is a got to do it. Skier, snowboarder, anyone that loves the outdoors and hates being cold. Action Heat provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body. Heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, even Under Armour, or even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. They also have men's and women's gear. They have all kinds of new styles and models just released for this winter season. So, tis the season for that. Great stuff for sure. We have a special deal here for our listeners to save 20% on your entire order. Go to actionheat.com/lockedon, all one word, all lowercase, to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. You guys got to do this. I mean, this is a no-brainer, especially if you live in the cold. Stay toasty and warm while you enjoy your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat, and we thank them very much for sponsoring the podcast. We got the Locked On Bills and then Locked On Packers, two people that absolutely could use Locked On or could use Action Heat product. We got that coming up right now. Kevin Masseri from Locked On Bills joins me now. And Kevin, it's great to talk to you. I haven't said a lot of wonderful things about the Bills the last 2 years, but one thing I think is very clear, and it's not going to happen overnight, but this is a well-coached team with a plan.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I tweeted this out and got pretty warm receptive by a lot of national media, local media. Josh Allen is making this Buffalo Bills team a lot better. I mean, he's 3-3 yeah. starting and completing a football game. I think that says a lot. I mean, they really went 0-4, 0-5 with Derek Anderson, Nathan Peterman. Other than that, the team will compete with anyone. I thought they had Houston on the ropes. They were up 3. Nathan Peterman comes in, pick 6, and then another pick to end the game. So the Bills team is not a 4-8 team when Josh Allen's under center. I mean, look, he accounted for, 66 yards today.
135 rushing.
135, had more rushing yards than Todd Gurley and everyone, I think, right. in the league this week, except for, I think, maybe Denver's running back. So, look, he's going to be a guy that's going to beat you with his legs. He's got sneaky athleticism. The Bills team is honestly one that's might be worth tuning in, as he kind of puts himself up there with maybe competing with Baker Mayfield for maybe not being QB4, QB5 out of this draft.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, scouting's not an exact science. And of the first-round quarterbacks, frankly, he was my least favorite. I mean, I love his tools, of course. I mean, it doesn't take an advanced scout to figure that out. But I worried about his accuracy. I worried about his pocket presence. Decision-making to some degree. I thought it'd be a big jump coming from the school that he did. And a lot of those things are still true. But, wow. I mean, he's already much better than I thought he'd be a year or two from now. I said something out on Twitter, like, just for entertainment value, he's going to be a blast to watch when the Bills start building around him this offseason.
Yeah, with, I mean, you have a team that has $100 million, probably going to have more once they determine what they're going to do with a few. The Bills took a lot of heat trading back out of Patrick Mahomes' pick. The Bills fired their coach or their scouting staff right after that draft last year. There was no way that they were going to select the quarterback of the future at that point in the draft. They traded back out, really, in my opinion, second best scenario, which was taking a really good cornerback in Tre'Davious White and a future first round pick, obviously turning into Josh Allen. Look, Patrick Mahomes has a ton of talent around him. I mean, the difference just in Kelce to Charles Clay alone wins a game. So, right. I mean, that's today, just one for one, just one for one. I'm not talking about anything else, anywhere else. You can make the argument that Bills defense is obviously really, really talented on, you know, being number one in the league, number one in pass defense. They get after the quarterback. I thought they had their moments of really in a game where you'd look at it and say, I don't think the Bills defense struggled much. They did on the penalty front. When they did, the team needed them, the best unit, you know, the number one rated defense in the NFL to come up big. They came up a little bit short against one drive, although it was aided by a couple of ridiculous penalties. But you have a quarterback that doesn't have much around him. I mean, LeSean McCoy is what he is. There's argument to be made how good he still is. The Bills line has actually been pretty decent in pass pro at times and pretty very poor in run protection. And you have really nothing at the weapon position outside of Zay Jones and undrafted free agent Robert Foster, who he almost hit for another 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah, and I think the defense is pretty well set. You can use one more big piece, maybe a big-ticket free agent edge rusher, you know, something like that. I wouldn't turn my nose up with as much money as the Bills have. But, of course, this is going to be a heavy offensive offseason, which is where I was going. Like, it's going to be so much fun. Think of where Allen's going to be a year from now if they build around him properly, which I think they will. But I'm glad you brought up Zay Jones. He really showed up big today. Do you think he's a build-around guy, or was it today kind of fluky? Because, I mean, he came in the league with some pedigree.
Yeah, he did, and the Bills traded up for him last year. I think he is. I mean, I think he's a guy I've even given some criticism to. He's had his drop problems, some self-inflicted. He missed a read today when Allen wanted him to stop in the middle of the end zone. He kept going on a drag. That was said to be Zay Jones's fault, even though, you know, some people would cross that up to Allen's accuracy, even though the play was for him to stop there for a touchdown, even though they connected two other touchdowns. He also made a ridiculous play at the end that he unfortunately dropped, or didn't drop, but it hit the ground, even though it was a hold, should have been a pass interference called on the play. I think he's coming around. I think he's developing. He's definitely a wide receiver two or three in this league, one that the Bills will keep and hold on to. And I think they'll pair Zay Jones and Robert Foster as maybe wide receiver three and four, and pair him with probably two new receivers.
Yeah, now you're talking. You know, like if he's your three, I mean, you're really good shape. And I think he can develop into a two. I mean, at best, maybe he's a Robert Woods. I mean, but today was a nice step in the right direction after starting his career very slow. Any other notes on this game? Usually when I bring a guest on, I at least want to bring up the opponent. Any chance the Dolphins make the playoffs? Any take on Tannehill? It looked like Stills and Parker were okay, but it's just such a benign Miami team.
I mean, it's tough because they got out yardage by almost 300 yards. I didn't see much. I mean, I thought Josh Allen was by far the best offensive player on the field today for both teams. I mean, they're still using a little bit too much of Frank Gore, you know, 8 carries for 21 yards. I mean, the Bills defense is pretty good and played good for most of the game. So some of their offensive numbers are going to look pretty poor. They got after Tannehill early. So he took a couple of early sacks. I mean, I don't think they're a playoff team. I think the Bills are honestly better. New England's obviously going to be able to waltz away with the division. I think you see him falter. I mean, I think Miami goes to Buffalo and loses in week 16. I think you see him. They're going to round out at 8-8, and unless it's a 4, 5, 6, 7 way tie at 8-8, I mean, they're not a playoff team.
Yeah. Kevin, besides Locked On Bills, where can people find you? I want everyone to follow you on Twitter and check out all your work. And then I'm going to tell them about my bookie after that.
Absolutely. No, I get it. You can find me once again at Twitter at Kevin Nasseri. And I am a contributing writer over at the Bills Wire at USA Today Sports Network.
Oh, nice.
So you can catch my written content over there, my audio content here on our network at Locked On Bills, and my blurbs and nuggets and notes at Kevin Nasseri on Twitter.
Kevin, you're the man. This was great. Anyone that listened to Friday's podcast, and every Friday I go to my bookie and I pick games, knows that I took the Bills. And if you've been listening to me this year, I think you made a little money. I didn't know that Buffalo would win or lose this game, but I thought they would keep it close. I thought that maybe they are the better team at this point. It's like Kevin had a great point about when they meet again in Buffalo. I absolutely will take the Bills, and I think they might be a really good bet the rest of the year in terms of, you know, my bookie with the spread. So I would only recommend a service to you guys that have been good to me, and I've recommended my bookie over and over, so clearly they've been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to my bookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting. I always tell you that's a great way to make a couple bucks. If you're a Bills fan and you're like, boy, the Bills have it today, I'm going to put a couple extra bucks on it in the midway through the first quarter. They have cool over-unders for fantasy. They have the most rewarding player perks in the business. But they're killing it right now, and they're just slammed with new bettors, and they want to give all you guys the best service possible. So if you're listening this Sunday night, this is a perfect time to do it. Hit pause on the podcast and go deposit at MyBookie, because as long as it's after 7 o'clock Eastern, 7 p.m. Eastern, they give you 25 free bucks. I mean, so join now and MyBookie will also match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use our promo code LOCKEDON25, that's LOCKEDON25, that activates the offer. Visit MyBookie online today, that's MYBOOKIE, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25. If you're willing to hold out till after 7 p.m., like if you're listening to this Sunday night, you get an extra 25 bucks just by using that promo code, LOCKEDON25. So it's up to you guys, but I would wait until after dinner and take the extra money. You know, you play, you win, you get paid. One. All right, I promised you guys earlier in the show that we are going to talk Packers. And honestly, when I set Peter up for this, the Packers had just lost a tough game. I was going to talk about, you know, boy, the O-line's in shambles. Belaga and Bell got hurt in this game. 2.7 yards per rush. I mean, I'm looking at my notes here. No deep shots down the field. Defense isn't that impressive. They could still make the playoffs, though, with an easy schedule. But I'm just throwing all that out the window, Peter, and it's welcome to the show. Please break the news and your opinions on it, if anyone has not heard yet.
Well, thank you for having me. Obviously, I had different notes going into this as well, but Mike McCarthy, no longer the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. And I think this is, if you know, whatever other analysis you want to do about whether this is smart or dumb or whatever, it is surprising in this respect. Mark Murphy, the president of the Packers, who set this team up last year, for those who don't know, there was an important change in the way the Packers are structured over the last year. Mark Murphy, basically, when he hired a new GM, siloed the coaching staff and the front office, saying, you all now report to me, essentially making Brian Gutekunst and Mike McCarthy at the time more or less co-equal, giving McCarthy a little bit more flexibility in having input on personnel, even though the final decisions were still going to be made by Murphy and Gutekunst. That also empowered Mark Murphy to be the sole decision maker, much like an owner in other organizations. Obviously, okay. Green Bay has no traditional owner to make this move. Mark Murphy and Mike McCarthy have a very good working relationship and had for a long time. In fact, it was Mark Murphy who worked with Russ Ball to secretly and genuinely secretly, like the public did not know until Ted Thompson was transitioned, that Mike McCarthy had received an extra year extension on his last contract.
Oh, wow.
So the understanding, I think, from most Packer fans, and I think most even people who cover the team, was Mark Murphy wouldn't do this to Mike McCarthy, someone who has given so much to this franchise, who
That's
has won
boy.
A Super Bowl with this. Yeah, exactly. Who won a yeah. Super Bowl with this franchise to make this move when it happened. According to Adam Schefter, Mike McCarthy was shocked that this had happened. I personally can't say I was shocked. I said on my show last week, if the Packers lose this game, we could be looking at someone else giving the head coach press conference on Monday afternoon. Yeah. And
because it's the Cardinals.
Right. Because right, if you lose right. to the worst team in the league,
14-point favorite or something, right?
You just can't be back. And I've gotten a lot of questions on Twitter, you know, what does this accomplish? Well, it accomplishes him not being your head coach anymore. And that sounds simplified, but the reality is when you're a new regime, and I would say Mark Murphy in his new position is a new regime, Brian Gutekunst ditto, you have to be willing to send a message to your team about accountability. Mm-hmm. And when you have a team as talented as Green Bay is, and you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, and it's clear they have offensive playmakers, it's clear they have defensive playmakers, and you underperform to this level, we can no longer accept that as an organization. And that, I think, more than anything else, was a culture-setting move by Mark Murphy to make this move now rather than on Black Monday.
Yeah, I like how you spelled it out. I mean, I absolutely thought the move was going to happen even before this game in the offseason on Black Monday, like you said. I mean, underperforming, maybe the most disappointing team in the league, zero road wins. And I, you know, when I went to my bookie on Friday, I told everyone to take the Cardinals because I didn't think the Packers should be favored by 14 over anyone, but I didn't pick the Cardinals to win. And then when this happened, and then you get the news, I'm kind of like, yeah, I guess it's something you have to do. You've hit rock bottom.
Yeah, true. I mean, that was the headline of the story that I wrote for Acme Packing Company when I tweeted it out was, this is rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And Mark Murphy proves that. This is just the kind of thing you can't come back from. And when you look at it from the perspective of, okay, they're not going to make the playoffs now in all likelihood. It would take, you know, the rest of the league just falling apart, which, by the way, that's what makes this even worse today. The Panthers lose. The Vikings lose. The Bears lose.
Right.
So if the Packers had won, they would have been firmly in the playoff picture, especially with the Cowboys seeming to pull away in the NFC East and Washington and Philadelphia not looking like anything particularly special.
And the schedule's not bad in front of them.
They had the easiest schedule in the league. Now, when you lose to the worst team in football, it's kind of hard to have any faith in what this team is going to do the rest of the way. So what do? You make a symbolic move. And now you give this team the opportunity to get that dead cat bounce with Joe Philbin, maybe. You know, they're not going to do anything, but you want to build a little momentum. You want Rodgers to be playing well going into next season. You want mm-hmm. Jair Alexander to keep being, you know, to keep his star turning. You want Devontae Adams to feel a part of this offense and Aaron Jones.
Kenny Clark. There's a lot of them.
And you want to build a little bit of momentum heading into the offseason because clearly now – this is the biggest moment in this Packers franchise, really, since 2008 when Aaron Rodgers took over, because this is the biggest decision they've had to make since they traded Brett Favre and installed Aaron Rodgers as the future of this franchise.
Do you think Rodgers is happy with the move?
I mean, if you believe all of the reporting mm-hmm. that's out there, and I do, I mean, there was the piece in Sports Illustrated that a source close to Rodgers quite literally said, I don't think Rodgers would be mad that people knew that he was upset about Mike McCarthy being Mike McCarthy. So long as that's true, and I think it is, I have no reason to believe it's not. And based on all the things that I've heard as well, that's just, he was done. Randall Cobb was asked point blank after the game, has Mike McCarthy lost this team? And Randall Cobb said, I'm a football player, that's above my pay grade, which is to say he didn't say no. If the answer mm-hmm. were no, wouldn't you just say no, Mike McCarthy right, is our right. guy?
Right. And I've been told, and this is secondhand, third-hand information, but it's pretty good information, that despite the State Farm ads and the great play on the field, Rodgers isn't quite as rosy to be around as you might think.
I don't think that's a shock to anyone.
Right.
Or at least it shouldn't be. He is a demanding quarterback and has always been. When you're winning, that's okay. And it's a little bit different when you're struggling. And you can see him, you know, it's interesting that is, insofar as that is true, and I think you're right, he is a prickly personality in general, and I think that's going to be something that the Packers are going to have to take into account with their next coach. He has also said in the past, as recently as 2015, he wants to be coached. What I think he needs and wants truly is right now he's sort of like a teenager who is really smart and really talented but doesn't always apply himself in the ways that he should, and he's just done listening to his parents. But what he really needs is someone to come in and say, Aaron, someone he respects, and say, Aaron, we need you to do X, Y, and Z, and re-engage him, reinvigorate him, because he's someone that needs to be constantly stimulated. He's someone who, in a video on the record with Josh Rosen last year, admitted he gets bored in practice and screws around. That to me signals a player who needs a reset. Someone that can come in and you know, whether it's someone like Lincoln Riley or Josh McDaniels or someone like that, you know, let's say the Packers bring in someone like Dave Taub and say, hey, Cliff Kingsbury, why don't you come run our offense? I think that sort of new challenge and a coach that's gonna stimulate his brain, because he is a very unique mind in our game, that is the kind of thing that he needs. He needs that. But when you look at the players around him, Devontae Adams swears by Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Jones, Randall, I mean, he was in Randall Cobb's wedding. Randall Cobb loves Aaron Rodgers. Jordy Nelson loved Aaron Rodgers. So it's not that I think that he's a bad teammate. I don't think he is. You look at someone like Phillip Rivers, who is harder on the guys around him than Phillip Rivers? Well, when those guys are good, look at what the Chargers can be. And the same thing is true for the Packers.
They've had
a lot of talent.
right.
And he's not on the sideline with a towel over his head. There were a couple times they showed him on the sidelines. He was calling guys over with the tablet. Hey, look at this. This is what we're going to do. You see him with his arm around guys. This is what we need to do. I think he's in a unique position for him, and that is he's used to veteran guys. He's used to Greg Jennings and Donald Driver and Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. He's not used to Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown, Jamon Moore, even to a lesser extent, Jimmy Graham and Lance Kendricks. These are players that he's not super familiar with. And so he's having to sort of learn on the fly how to manage some of these other personalities as well.
No, I think that's well said. And I've heard often people compare him to a great jazz musician. And you don't just throw a great jazz musician in with a bunch of dudes he doesn't know. You know, I mean, like, you get used to playing with each other. You develop those things. And I do think he's ultra competitive. And it sounds like, hey, being bored at practice and things means he doesn't care. I don't think that's it. I think he needs stimulated, like you said. And sometimes just coaches get stale. I've heard the same thing out of this guy's mouth over and over and over. I need another voice in my ear. And taking it one step further, and to McCarthy's credit, he has altered the offense a little bit the last couple weeks. But I think, you know, Rodgers watches the Rams play the Chiefs and say, wonder what I would do in that offense. You know what I mean? Or the Saints. Or if somebody catered around me like these teams would, holy smokes, would we just tear it up.
Well, and what did Tom Brady say about Aaron Rodgers? If he were running our offense, he'd throw for 7,000 yards.
Yes.
And right. I think if you're looking at...
I stop you real quick. I just want to throw this out here because, you know, who's better, Rodgers or Brady? And the one thing I'll always say is clear your mind of all thoughts you know and think of a world where Rodgers and Belichick were together for the last 12 years. And then tell me what you think.
They would have had to cancel the NFL, I think.
Right, it wouldn't be fun anymore.
Well, and so this is the question, right? If you think Aaron Rodgers is going to be dubious of the next coach, and I think he is deeply loyal to the people that he values. I think he was very loyal to Alex Van Pelt, who the Packers dismissed in the offseason, or who asked to not be re-signed. I mean, that's a nuance that I think a lot of people miss, but he really liked Ben McAdoo, who got a head coaching opportunity. He was not, you know, upset about that. But he's going to need someone that he can trust. And I don't think he trusted Mike McCarthy anymore. What could be a better validation for Aaron Rodgers than to have his friend, Tom Brady, say of a coach like Josh McDaniels, if Rodgers were in our offense, he would light the world on fire. What else does Rodgers need to know than to have Tom Brady stamp his approval on that guy and that offense? I think if we're going to, and you haven't asked me to handicap, but I'll do it.
I was going to go there next with McDaniels.
I think the most, not just the best candidate, but I truly think the most likely candidate at this point is Josh McDaniels. And there's some reporting out there that he would consider and is interested in a job, including in the Green Bay job, should that come available. Now we know it is available. Albert Breer reported that he is very connected in New England, especially. So and Green Bay has always, especially from a front office perspective, admired what New England is done. I know Bill Belichick has a ton of respect for not only Mike McCarthy, but for Aaron Rodgers. And if Josh is going to leave to go somewhere, I think the Patriots in particular would be more okay than, say, the Colts for Josh McDaniels to go and make that move. I think it's the most likely move, and I also think it's the best move, which in the NFL rarely happens.
No, you're 100% right. I was going to go there too, and my only two things to add to that are, of all the jobs that could possibly be open, this is the best one to me. You know, Rodgers has a lot to do with it. But, you know, you opened the show with the power structure right now in the organization. Uh-huh. If I'm McDaniels, I might want to shop for the groceries and cook them. You know what I mean? Like, I might want to be Belichick. I mean, you got to hand it all over to me.
Well, we also saw that story in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So does he want to go back down that road?
Did he learn from those mistakes? Or yes. Did he get better at it? Or who knows?
And he did in previous job situations where he was up for head coaching jobs intimate that he wanted to bring Nick Cesario with him from the Patriots organization. But also remember, when he was a candidate for the 49ers job, when Kyle Shanahan was ultimately hired, the 49ers structured that hiring process uniquely in that they were potting coach and GM candidates. And the coach and GM candidate, one of the final two with Shanahan and Lynch, were Brian Gutekunst and Josh McDaniels. Hmm. And so they're familiar with one another. They've vetted one another. And so while it's true that what McDaniels could say is, I want some sort of level of personnel control, what Green Bay could do with this unique power structure is say, if you come to Green Bay, we don't need to give you the GM title. We have a great guy in charge of general managing, so to speak, who's in charge of the player personnel stuff. But in our structure, you are co-equal to the GM. So if you have something you want to say, you go to Brian, or you go to Mark Murphy, you say it, and that gets trickled down to Brian Gutekunst. That may seem convoluted.
No, I see what you're saying.
But from a coach's standpoint, you can justify that and say, well, if I'm going to be just as powerful as the GM, then that's just as good as being as having GM duties, and maybe even more, because if our personnel fails, if we don't have a good team, then, hey, look, I get to blame the GM. It's not my fault. I'm not picking players. He is, even though I have say in what's going on day to day.
Peter, this was awesome. I could talk to you much longer. It's a big story. I do need to run, though. Besides Locked On Packers, where else can people find you?
You can find me at SB Nation, covering the Packers and other NFL stuff, Acme Packing Company. I'm also Up Rocks, Pro Football Weekly, a little bit at FanSided from time to time. I am all over the internet. Follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski.
Awesome. Folks, that is a wrap. I'm glad I got this in. I told you I had some scheduling quirks with the Steelers being on Sunday night, but we got it under the gun, and it was a great show, and we got to break some big news and discuss that. Good stuff. All right, over and out. I will be back with Sage on Tuesday.